Oh, wait, that's my cue. Okay, let's hit it again. In 3, 2, 1. I'm Joe. I'm joined tonight by my good friend Adam Voley, and we're getting reacquainted after 20 years apart.
Hi, I'm Adam Voley, and this is Cheaper Than Therapy. In the next couple of shows, we're going to go back down memory lane and figure out just what happened to us. Because we come from pretty similar roots, Joe, and yet I feel like, I don't want to be too dramatic about this, but we've grown apart.
We've grown apart. We're still friends. We still have a lot of things in common, things that we can hang out and talk about, but we've got a lot of differences that we didn't have when we were first hanging out.
I meant you moved to Wisconsin.
I've moved to Wisconsin. You moved to Colorado, and then Atlanta, and then to South Korea.
Oh, okay. You're right. Yeah, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Fair point. Please continue.
A lot of changes there. But we've also moved apart just in terms of some of our core beliefs and positions, and it'll be interesting to trace exactly how and why that occurred.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting opportunity. This is our inaugural podcast. We'll be doing some other stuff coming up, but I'm looking forward to finding out just who you've become and how it happened, and I guess starting with our common roots, you actually remained in Virginia, where we were childhood friends, for a while after that. So there's this whole kind of cast of characters from back when we knew each other that I lost track of, but that are a much larger part of your life.
Yeah, that is certainly true. I as you mentioned, I grew up in Virginia, was born there, and never left until I went to college, whereas we knew each other for a much shorter period of time. But certainly those relationships I had were a huge part of pretty much the first half of my life.
The curse of the military brat. But you know what? Our audience might not appreciate just how different we've become. So how about we start with a quick summary of ourselves? In Norfolk, Virginia, Joe Martin and I were part of the same church, more particularly part of the same Boy Scout-like Christian youth group. It's called Awanas. If you've heard of it, I've just said everything you need to know. If you haven't, Protestant Christianity in America feels like they have to have Christian versions of everything in mainstream popular culture. So this is the alternative to Boy Scouts. Awanas, you get the neckerchief if you're young enough, you have the shirt, you have an oath, and you memorize Bible verses and complete tasks in order to get your badges.
But pretty much memorize Bible verses.
Yeah, pretty much, though, we memorize Bible verses. Romans 3:23 was everyone's favorite because it was so short. How long did we do that for, Joe?
That's a good question, and that's part of what I've been trying to remember about our time together growing up. Just because it feels like, in terms of impact, we were together quite a while. But as we were discussing a couple of nights ago, you were actually only in Virginia for a short number of years, far shorter than I would have actually guessed had you asked me how long we had actually spent together.
But see, only relatively speaking, Norfolk, Virginia remains the the longest period that I've lived anywhere straight. And so in terms of impact, I completely agree, actually. Norfolk, Virginia is the golden childhood for me. That is the place where my happiest memories are, as far as growing up and being nostalgic about, you know, boyhood and whatnot.
That's an interesting point, and I think you'd said you were in Virginia from 9 to 13, which is also the same age I was when I knew you, and I think for a lot of people, those kind of would be the golden years of childhood. Those are the years when you're first getting a little bit of independence, first having your own real set of friends based around interests rather than proximity, and getting to take control of your own life in some ways.
That's a good point about that phase of life that ages 9 to 13 are. I honestly haven't thought of it that way. For me, Norfolk, Virginia, the goodness of my time in Norfolk, Virginia is essentially defined by how long I got to stay there, the circle of friends I had, the amount of freedom I had, because unlike you, I lived on a military base. And the neat thing about military bases is that mothers still weren't helicopter parents there. They knew that there was an armed guard and a barbed wire fence. And otherwise, you had the run of the place for, you know, a solid couple miles. So I actually did there get that classic boyhood experience where you're out the door at 3 and all that you have to do is be back by dinner at 6. And second, that's the Norfolk, Virginia was the last place where my parents were, if not happy, then at least affecting a peaceful marriage. And everything started kind of falling apart after. So Norfolk, Virginia perhaps is an elevated rosy glow in my head simply for everything that came after.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think we had a lot in common back at that time. As you've said, we were both in Awanas together, and that was certainly a big part of things. But there was also a shared background in terms of we were both homeschooled. We were doing mm-hmm. slightly different things for homeschool, but we were both homeschooled, and that sets you apart enough from the other kids that it becomes a common point. Mm-hmm. And you were part of a military family, whereas I wasn't, but at the same time, I was very familiar with the military. I would say half or three quarters of my friends were military kids, and my grandfathers both were former military. So military definitely wasn't in any way foreign to me. So that was a little bit of common background, although I didn't get the experience you did of being a military brat and moving around from place to place. That was my dad's experience growing up, and I heard about it from him, but I never actually lived it myself.
And even though we didn't go to the same church, I think we had similar theologies, or at least we were raised by similar people.
I think so. I would describe my church background, especially then growing up in Norfolk, as independent, fundamentalist, pound the Bible, conservative Baptists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be right. And, you know, we've never discussed that, but I guess the reason why it comes to me is because whenever I did touch base with you in the following years, you would be mentioning names that I had heard of as well. John Piper, you know, and so on and so forth.
Right, very, very, even if we were in separate churches, a very similar group of people that the churches looked up to and respected and liked to quote.
And what about politics? Is your family traditionally conservative?
Yeah, my family is traditionally conservative, definitely on my mom's side, stalwart Republicans, although my grandfather absolutely hated Richard Nixon. Other than that, stalwart Republicans. I think on my dad's side, it's a little bit more mixed, but coming from West Virginia, conservative politically, if not always economically.
Who doesn't, I mean, quote unquote, hate Richard Nixon? I mean, I suppose there's this whole group of partisans out there that have simply given up the battle for his legacy and have gone quiet. Much like your grandparents who were racist have just kind of shut up by now.
There is an interesting subgroup of conservatives I've run across online and have read columns of who are still Nixon apologists and are still beating the drum about how underappreciated he is as a both domestic president and foreign policy president, which I find absolutely astounding. But the man does still have his defenders.
That's really interesting. I mean, I guess he's defined by his big scandal that ended his presidency. And I know that you could argue individually that certain things he did was fantastic, like rapprochement with China and what have you. But, Anyway, maybe, who knows? Maybe we'll pick that up again at the politics part of the show.
Anything's a possibility.
Right. Okay, so Anything more to say about who we are?
I think that about covers it. I mean, when I think back of who I was in that point of my life, you could pretty much, I wasn't political at that age. That came a few years later. It was certainly in the background, but it isn't how I thought of myself at the time. No, how I thought of myself at the time could pretty much be summed up as middle class, suburban, conservative, Baptist, Christian, homeschooler, with a strong interest in Star Wars and Star Trek. Did not read, and I suppose this is something interesting to throw in. You have been, as far back as I can remember, a comic books fan. I never was really exposed to comics growing up. I would say my interests growing up were pure Star Wars, Star Trek, and everything I read on the science fiction shelf at the local library. Mm. And I do mean everything.
Yeah, I don't know if... I'm pretty sure my family wasn't middle class. It's hard to tell in the military because there are a lot of perks in the military that make your dollar go further. I recall growing up that we had a very set way of doing things that I felt was related to the budget, which is to say that we saw a movie once a week and then we ate at Taco Bell. And my wife, who was also a homeschooled child, confirms that that was a very common thing to do in such communities. At Taco Bell, you could feed your family for much less than you can feed McDonald's or anywhere else. So Taco Bell was a regular destination, and she never wants to go there again. Similarly, the base movies were heavily discounted. And other than that, we didn't really do much. I recall references to my mother borrowing money. So I don't think we were well off, but on the other hand, again, the military kind of provides a financial buffer by providing housing and discounted goods. So on a living, we were fine, and my childhood was happy, and I never wanted for anything.
Yeah, and when I say I'm middle class, I mean, I suppose we could have an interesting pour-off conversation. I would say I think of our family growing up as more lower middle class than middle class, or definitely not upper middle class. But similar to you, there was a lot that we didn't do that was very specifically for budget reasons. We did not go out to eat except on very, very rare occasions. And we did not buy books. We were library folks. It's interesting being where I am now, being more around people who, if they want a book, tend to buy it, which is something I do myself. But growing up, I mean, you never bought a book. You always checked it out at the library. And we always drove second, usually third or fourth hand cars. So when I say middle class, definitely don't intend to imply that we were comfortably off. But I would say it was never, kind of like you say, it was never an unhappy time and never felt like we were wanting for anything. We just didn't necessarily do as much as other families that I knew.
Your parents, like my wife's parents, probably had a even more stringent budget since they had so many children. My mother and father only had two. You know what just occurred to me? you mentioned buying books as something you do now that you couldn't do back then. For me and my wife, it's buying concessions at the movie theater. There is something ridiculously luxurious for us still, like treating yourself if you buy popcorn at the theater, because it's twice as expensive or four times as expensive probably than it should be, and it was just something we put out of our heads as a kid. You know, it was considered not only overly expensive but outright foolish. You know, you learned to disdain these things that were out of the picture.
Right. You end up with this mindset of what exactly is the point of movie popcorn anyway? I mean, you've probably eaten within an hour or two of the time you've gone to the movie, or else you will certainly be eating within an hour or so of leaving the movie. So why would you ever need to buy food at the movie theater, especially at those prices? And mm-hmm. you end up with this mindset of it's not so much the money, it's the foolishness.
Right. And it's interesting to think now about how much your circumstances drive your mindset.
Yes.
Well, I guess that settles who we were, Joe. Let's talk about who we are. What are the ABCs of you?
So the ABCs of me is I am definitely in a range that is solidly middle class, if not upper middle class at this point. It's always interesting to try to determine where you fit on the scale versus how others would perceive you, but definitely better off than my parents were at this stage, financially speaking. Living in Wisconsin, as you mentioned before, married with four children, which really defines quite a lot about me in terms of how much time I have available and how much flexibility and freedom I have when people contact me and say, hey, do you want to get together? It involves a lot more calendar flipping than is the norm when I was single or even when I was married before kids. Mm-hmm. Working for a healthcare information technology company here in Wisconsin. So I'm quite familiar with the U.S. healthcare system, and the area I work in specifically deals with medical billing. So I'm very familiar with the intricacies and insanities of how healthcare is paid for in this country.
Oh, that's interesting. I knew that your wife was a pharmacist back in the day, or maybe still, but I didn't remember that about your job.
Yeah, so that was an education I did not expect to get after college, but did get and has been very illuminating. So I guess college graduate, I would throw in there as one of the defining characteristics. Still Christian, but I would define my beliefs differently than I did when we were growing up. That's been quite a journey that I'm sure we'll get into. And still what a lot of people would consider politically conservative, although it again depends on who you talk to and what perspective you're looking at, since I'm more of a libertarian. But depending on how the conversation is going, you might get the idea that I'm either a flaming liberal or a troglodytic conservative.
Hmm. All right. And what about your tastes?
Yeah, tastes, I would say, I still read a massive amount of science fiction, read a fair bit of fantasy, and that's very similar to what I was reading growing up. More interested in nonfiction than I was at that point in my life. More interested in learning. I'm always interested in learning as much as I can about a huge variety of topics. And I would say my tastes overall, if we're going to talk about just general tastes, have gotten more expensive and high end, I think, as a reaction to growing up without having a lot of money. I've reacted, now that I have money, by going more into high end tastes and preferring the best of everything, rather than just as much of everything.
Got it. All right, my turn.
I would say your turn, and I'm sure I'll think of stuff that I wish I had added in. Oh, look, I'm looking at our outline right now, and I'm thinking I should throw in, when we knew each other, I played in Little League baseball a bit, but wasn't really into sports beyond that. And since then, I've become quite into sports. Big fan of college basketball, somewhat a fan of college football, and big fan of the NFL. And my sister is slowly but surely getting me into soccer, or as the rest of the world calls it, football. So sports has become a big part of who I am and what I'm interested in.
Well, all right. Anything else to add?
I think that for this time, that's everything.
All right. Well, my game then, or my ball, I should say. All right, so I am now... If you'd asked me back in college, I had almost a diagram planned out in my head that I kept to a simple three-point process. I was a writer, I was a Christian, and I was in love and later married to Anna, who is now my wife. These days, I've only got two of those going on, but I was a person who wanted to write in college, and as of this year, I am a writer. I've fully made the career move over to being a fiction and nonfiction writer after spending a total of 5.5 years in South Korea teaching English. My wife and I will also be starting a new business later in the year, which will be a hostel. I've been married for 7 years. There are no children on the way. That's not ruled out. I'm still considering it, and so is she. But at present, finishing career goals that we think would be much more difficult.
I can say from experience that everything is more difficult with children.
that's the word. Religion, as I said, I once was Christian, and actually, Joe, you probably remember when that changed, but it was roughly around the time I got married that I admitted to myself that I didn't believe in the Bible. And shortly after that, and that is definitely going to be an interesting episode. With regard to career, I would love to eventually be a person who earns all of his income from fiction, but that's almost an antiquated business model these days. Vast majority of professional writers have secondary jobs, often as creative writing professors, or writing articles, or nonfiction. And that last one is the kind of person that I am right now. I am making money writing scripts for others, and also writing corporate histories. Politically, I have made sweeping change, and I've really covered almost every base at this point. I was a dyed-in-the-wool Republican going into college. I became a libertarian. And last year, I strongly supported Bernie Sanders, who is, of course, an avowed socialist. I am considering, even now, celebrating Trump's inauguration by formally joining the Democratic Party.
This is for one who has known you for a while. Shocking news.
And I'm sure that will be an interesting episodes 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, since those tales tend to grow in the telling. Sports-wise, I've recently begun to appreciate them far more than I have. Growing up, my parents made me try everything once. They felt that I needed to get out and at least experiment, so I had one miserable season of baseball, one miserable season of soccer, one miserable season of basketball, and one decent season of swimming that got messed up the second. And finally, they just left it alone. Growing up, I defined myself as a guy who doesn't like sports. When you're growing up, you find an identity. You think it's important to figure out what you like and don't like. And you put yourself in a bit of a box, which is how I felt I acted. It's only recently I've found that actually I can very much enjoy games, even if I'm not too good at them. I played volleyball throughout 2000, and I do dabble in martial arts, Krav Maga and Muay Thai, which is almost a cheat, because even people who don't like sports think martial art is cool. It's the sport for geeks who don't like sports.
That is actually a really good way to put it, because I know a lot of geeks that won't touch traditional sports with a 15-foot pole, but bring up the subject of martial arts, and everyone's interested in that.
Yeah, of course. It's in all the stories, right? And I think geeks, as much as your stereotypical jocks, actually are strongly concerned with masculinity. Location-wise, as previously stated, I have bounced around like a ping pong. 5 years in one location is probably my room. And that was Norfolk, Virginia, where I met Joe Martin. I've lived in 6 or 7 states with my parents. I am a native Georgian. My family is based around. But the time I've spent abroad has been the time that's probably most affected. My time abroad is what I think of now when I think of how I've changed. 4 years in South Korea, and then 1 year traveling the world has taught me, it's made me a different person. As far as family goes, I've said that I don't have children and that I have a wife. My parents are divorced. I have 2 little sisters. Have I mentioned that, Joe?
No, I knew you had a brother, which I suppose we haven't actually talked about our own immediate families at all, but I knew you had a brother. I did not know you had sisters.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I have. So here's the first big surprise of the podcast then. Yeah, so I have a brother. He's 2.5 years younger than me, and you would have seen him in Norfolk, Virginia. But my father remarried, and now I have 2 little 7-year-old sisters. One is straight up Chinese, and the second is half Chinese. And the Chinese girl, Noelle, was adopted wholesale, whereas the half Chinese girl, Emma, was adopted as an embryo, which is to say that she's not related by blood, but that my stepmother did give birth.
Oh, that is fascinating.
Yeah, isn't technology marvelous? Love him to death.
Making the family tree even more complicated than it's ever been before.
Yeah, no lie. Just last week, my wife and I had not a debate, but a discussion on which we were on different sides about filling out a temporary will for ourselves. And the question arose of how to divvy up money if we both perished in a plane crash, and how much should go to the girls. They're completely taken care of, and the money would do more for our older siblings, and yet I felt that on principle they should get a share, just to affirm that I consider them full sisters, because you don't want to send the wrong message. And anyway, it was just an interesting question, and I remember thinking to myself, yeah, family politics have only gotten more complicated.
That is true.
Tastes. Here's one area where things just haven't changed too much. Well, I guess that's not true. Okay. I do still like comics, and I do still like science fiction and fantasy. I think after you've read enough of something, you become far more discerning in its quality. So I'm far more easily bored with it. I'm more selective in my choices these days. That's one explanation. The second, of course, is that as a writer myself, I value different things now. I used to complain about certain things and stories like fans do, and I would always get mad that writers poo-pooed our concerns about where stories were going. And now I often find myself on the other side of the argument. So there's definitely a different perspective there as I've gotten older. I'm also more into literature. And overall, I guess, storytelling, I guess what I'm saying is that why I love stories has changed. And that would be interesting to talk about. As far as general tastes go, you mentioned that you like high-end things. Not by principle, but by temperament. I don't have many possessions. I just don't like having a lot of things around. The reason it's easy to resist buying knickknacks or souvenirs for myself is because my first thought is, oh, that's neat. And my second thought is, but then where would I put it? And then the third thought is, am I going to have to keep up with this for how long? I just don't like that. And I remember when that happened, in fact. There may also be some Puritanism involved. It's hard to say. I have this odd relationship with material objects. Sometimes I actually feel sad when I receive them. But at the same time, I have no trouble spending large amounts of money. I can't call myself an anti-materialist or non-consumerist because I have no trouble dropping money. Nice dinner out, and I did just spend a ridiculous amount of money on myself by traveling the world last year. So I wouldn't say that that my distaste for possession virtue, I just think it's redirected. And I think that's all I have to say about that.
It's interesting that you bring that up about a distaste for possessions. It almost sounds as though the combination of the military life and the time you've spent overseas has given you a distaste for needing to move things around with you. That it's a lot simpler life if your pleasures are experiences such as a nice meal out or a movie rather than stuff that has to come with you, be packed and unpacked.
Yes, I suppose that's true. It's certainly true that we have tried over the last half a decade to keep our possessions to a minimum because, as you say, we have to repack them or we have to get rid of them when we go somewhere. And we always knew that when we were going to South Korea that we would come back. So that's always in the back of your head. Beyond that, I'll tell you something else. I'm naturally a very forgetful and sometimes clumsy person. My head is always in the clouds. I'm thinking of other things. This is both my strength and my great weakness. So when I purchase my new iPhone, for example, it's slightly terrifying because the small object costs a lot of money. And in college, my friends used to make a game out of returning my lost possessions to me. It was ridiculous how often it happened. You know, here's your hat, Adam. Adam, found your notebook. Adam, your phone. And so on and so forth. Yeah, so that's another bit about possession. Owning something means taking responsibility for it. And I am hard on myself when I fail a responsibility. I feel very foolish if I waste money or if I break something.
That's a very interesting perspective to take, because of course there's different ways you can look at responsibility, different things you can take responsibility for. And I don't know that I've ever felt that way in terms of feeling like my possessions are a responsibility to be kept up with. There are certainly other things in my life that I feel a huge responsibility for and a burden for.
Your kids, for example, your wife.
Right. Kids, wife, things that need to be done around the house, areas of responsibility, perhaps at work and at home. But possessions, and maybe this is just in response to having a job that pays well and having some money available at this point in my life, but it really is more for me an attitude of, if I lose something, no big deal. It's replaceable, generally easily so. So it's not something I sweat over.
It's funny, like philosophically speaking, I totally agree with you. And whenever Anna loses something or breaks something, that's exactly what I say. Don't worry about it. If people fight over food, I say, listen, we'll just buy more. I have a very strong sense that things that cost money aren't worth worrying. Money is not worth worrying about terribly. Unless, for example, you're starting a business or buying a car, which I just did today. And that's always stressful.
Yes.
But, no, I do feel as if things matter. When I'm taking care of them. And you actually raised one point that I forgot to mention and that you mentioned in your introduction, which is, as far as my income level goes, I suppose I was low middle class as of last year. At present, if you're just judging by income level, then I am definitely low income, but that would be misleading. Over the last 4 or 5 years, my wife and I have made, you know, $36K together, but plus housing allowance and everything else. The whole reason we went to South Korea in the first place is because you don't make a whole lot of money there, but you do get to save almost all of it if you want to. And by working very hard, we could save all of the money we needed for the business we're starting. I suppose I'm much better off than a lot of people simply because my wife and I are debt-free and we have a lot of liquid cash in the bank, but we don't really own much, you know, and when you factor in houses and things you have equity in, I have no idea, honestly, whether we're even with other people on average in my age range or not.
This gets into something we may get into in either a politics show, a separate politics show, or just in our politics discussion on as we get reacquainted. But that whole separation between income, assets, and consumption level is actually a huge part of the way I think about politics and economics and policy. So it's interesting to hear that you've got some direct experience with the messiness that is inherent in those various categories and as to whether one should be considered poor or not poor.
And I think that about covers it.
I think it does.
So next time, we'll start with our first subsection and getting to know each other and find out just what we missed when I moved away. Growing up is an interesting experience. My old creative writing professor used to say that if you've done nothing else than live to be 21, then there's enough interesting things happen to you to write a book. I think that's true.
That is certainly true. That period of time for me from 13 to 21 certainly had a lot of experiences, and there was enough there that did a lot to determine how I think about the world, how I experience the world, and what my patterns and habits are now, that you tend to think you were young and dumb during that period of your life, which is certainly true, but I think it's hugely formative in terms of who you become, whether you become someone as a reaction to those years of your life, or whether you become someone just as a further outgrowth of those years of your life.
Well, isn't that the cliche that you either completely ape your parents and your influences, or else you go the opposite direction completely.
Cliche, and for good reason. But I think there's a lot there, and I'm looking forward to discussing with you next time what exactly it is that happened in your life during those period, and sharing what happened in mine.
Me too. And we hope you'll join us. Thank you very much, Joe, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Adam. Looking forward to it.